today's news.
Hello and welcome to Old News, the programme and podcast which looks at news stories of the day through the papers of yesterday. We'll have to stay with the TT, really, won't we? It's still being TT fortnight, officially. If we go back to the Peel City Guardian, Saturday, May the 28th, 1910, we have a lovely picture of the early days of the TT. Motorcycle race, TT race is the heading. The island makes holiday, a splendid sports day, victory for the matchless. That being the motorbike make, of course. Thursday saw the running of the Motorcycle Tourist Trophy race, practicing for which has been ongoing spiritedly for a week previous. Great language. This was the fourth race for the International Autocycle Tourist Trophy. Remarkable interest has been taken in this year's event, and the entrants reached the large total of 84. The course was the same as last September's. Not the mountain course, of course, at this stage. The triangular roadway from St John's to Michael by Croncavoddy, back to Peel by Glen Cam, and through Peel to the starting point. This is about 15 miles. The competitors had to compete 10 circuits or 158 miles, 220 yards. The race is distinctly one for the development of ideal touring motorcycles of the horsepower required by the ordinary user, as opposed to the racing motorcycle, and it's not necessarily a race between existing standard types. I think that's varied a bit now, hasn't it? The speed of the competing machines is limited by fixing a definite cylinder capacity of 500 cubic centimetres for single cylinder engines and a total capacity of 670 cubic centimetres for multi-cylinder engines. In addition to winning the handsome trophy presented to the Autocycle Union by the Marquis de Mouzy-Saint-Marc, £40 is given to the rider competing the distance of the race in the shortest time, £20 to the rider finishing second, £10 third, £5 fourth. A silver cup value £5 five shillings will be awarded for the first private owner and a silver cup value £2 two shillings to the second private owner, provided they are not among the first three and that their performance is sufficiently meritorious. Quite right too. Quite good prizes back in that day, I would imagine. And then the whole list of entries is there, starting with Collier and Bennett and Evans and going on through a wonderfully named Mr. J. Slaughter, W.H. Groves, McMinnies, Perryman, and on it goes. It then lists in some detail the accidents whilst practising. Several accidents have taken place during the practice. Woodman, the rider of the Indian machine, who sustained a compound fracture of his right leg, reported in our last issue, had to have his leg amputated on Saturday. Good heavens. On Monday morning there were several spills, but none serious. The most serious accident befell Brewster on a Norton. He smashed into the wall at Ballacrane, buckled his front wheel and struck his head against the wall, the impact causing him to lose consciousness. He eventually recovered consciousness and was removed to his lodgings. And we're told his lodgings are Miss Boyd's, Mount Morrison in Peel. He has since practically recovered, apart from a sore head, one imagines. On Saturday, a collision occurred between Quinton Smith, a Douglas rider, and Adamson at the top of Craig Willie Sill. Both riders on Triumph machines proceeded around the course together, and on ascending the hill, Adamson was some distance ahead. An accident to Adamson's driving belt caused him to suddenly slow down, with the result that Smith, who was following at a rapid pace, was unable to steer clear of his companion. The violent impact unseated both riders, who were hurled into the roadway with considerable force. Adamson escaped with a shaking and had the skin taken off the side of his head and cheek. Dear me. Smith had the misfortune to have his collarbone broken and also dislocated the end of his shoulder. He was conveyed to his home at the Sheffield Hotel in Douglas. The weather on Thursday was not quite ideal. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? Though the motorists seemed blessed with fine days, heavy fog lay over the land and the roads were thick with dust. An enormous crowd had congregated at St John's, the starting point, and right along the course, sightseers were numerously distributed. Peel people selected good vantage spots, and at Peveril Road, Church Street and Albany Road, where the track ran through the town, there were many spectators. The start were from St John's Green at 10:15, the cycles being sent off in pairs at 20-second intervals. And there were numerous non-starters, we are told. It all sounds fairly familiar, albeit the speeds obviously a little bit slower than you might expect today. There are various other accounts of incidents and various bikes. The most exciting incident of the day occurred on this round. Number 21, we are told, W.E. Bashel, came into the starting point, completing his fourth circuit with his machine ablaze. It seemed that his tankard burst and the contents took fire. Frantic efforts were made to extinguish the blazing petrol and tyres extended right across the racing track, and succeeding machines dashed through the fire. The flames were finally extinguished, but not before the motorcycle was reduced to a sorry-looking piece of framework. Bashel, we're pleased to hear, got off with no worse than a burnt hand. H.H. Bowen, we're told finally, attempted acrobatics at Ballacrane. He turned completely around and went backwards into the wall, tumbled off, picked himself up again, and went on. Made of stern stuff then and now. Going forward a bit to 1929 in the Isle of Man Examiner, Friday, June the 28th, High Bailiff's profitable morning, we're told. TT visitors helped to swell the National Fund. Well, I think the police still kept relatively busy through TT. The revenue to the island from the TT races accrues from many sources, and the contributions which drop into the coffers of the insular treasury in the shape of fines paid in the High Bailiff's Court by offending visiting motorcyclists are not to be despised. On Saturday morning last, seven young sports from England and Ireland were called upon to pay fines varying from 2 and 6 to 30 shillings, and the whole batch was disposed of inside 10 minutes. Each defendant smilingly expressed a willingness to promptly settle the little account, and the High Bailiffs observed, "We've had quite a profitable little time." Frederick Hayes, the worst offender, was charged with driving a motorcycle and combination down Crosby Hill at the close of the lightweight race at terrific speed, and with refusing to stop when signalled to do so by a constable. The High Bailiff considered this sort of thing was the cause of many unnecessary accidents, and imposed a fine of £1 with 16 and 10 costs. Frederick Jackson, who pleaded guilty to driving a motorcycle in the streets of Douglas without a silencer on the machine, the evidence showed there was a straight through exhaust, was fined 30 shillings and £1.10 costs. Leonard Grosvenor, meanwhile, was fined 5 shillings for driving a car without a licence, and Jack Williams, Desmond Harry, Nelson Kelly and Edward Patrick Heaney, four visitors from the Free State, were also fined a like sum for not having horns attached to their machines. I like the way they all just smiled and said, "Yes, we'll cough up." To 1939 now, in the Isle of Man Times, Saturday, June the 10th, catering for TT visitors. Many trips next week, we're told. The Isle of Man Steam Packet Company intend offering for TT visitors next week almost to their utmost capacity. The Ben McCree takes her first sailing today, Saturday, and she'll be joined by the Lady of Man next Friday for Senior Day. For the junior race, the Mona's Queen will come from Liverpool, followed by the Timwald. Then there will be another midnight trip for the lightweight TT, the Manxman taking the sailing. For the senior on Friday, however, there will be sufficient steamers to carry many thousands of passengers. The Temple Press, remember that? Will run two trips from Fleetwood by the Mona's Queen and the Fenella. The same company will carry its trippers on the Manxman from Liverpool. Then, in addition, the Steam Packet Company will run the Lady of Man from Liverpool, sailing at 1 a.m, the Ben sailing immediately after her, and the Victoria. There'll be sailings from Douglas at 4 p.m, 7 p.m. for Temple Press visitors, and shortly after midnight. The Temple Press, you don't often hear of them, do you? To 1947 in the Isle of Man Times, Saturday, July the 5th, the Ireland and the TT races. Looking back on the recent TT races, the first and the last possibly on pool petrol, we can say at once that they were very successful from every point of view. The number of visiting motorists and motorcyclists was easily a record, and we now know that the arrivals of visitors in the weekend preceding the TT and the numbers for the next weekend differed by around 10,000. But no one with any common sense has ever questioned the value of the TT races to the Isle of Man, or the value of the island to the races and the trade. The two are partners on a profit-sharing basis. Each has its contribution to make to the other, and each is indispensable to the other. The most pleasing feature of all was the absence of really serious accident. We cannot blind ourselves to the fact that the TT races are attended by very great risks. It has always been so, and it will always be so. But I'm afraid that is true. Several fine young men have met their death in the quest for TT and Manx Grand Prix honours. Happily, there was no such appalling accident in last week's events. In the senior and lightweight TT2, we had wonderfully close finishes and all the elements of really exciting races were present in all events. The article goes on to say, this year, for the first time, the marshalling was in the hands of the chief constable, who was the chief marshal, with four well-tried men as sector chief marshals. Opinions vary as to the policy of making the police responsible for marshalling the course, but from our own observations and from what we hear, it was done very efficiently, and no better justification could be found for the change. No praise is too high for the large band of enthusiasts who year after year have acted as marshals, particularly at the morning practices, and have done the job really well. Whether it is done under police or civilian supervision, with police or civilian supervision, seems to many to matter very little, so long as it's done efficiently. We also hear at the end of that, stop evening practices. Another point, we hope there will be no more evening practices. The recent practices cost the places of amusement at least £1,000. They simply cannot afford this contribution. If they are to continue, then such places as the Palace and Villa will not be able to afford to open with their big noisy bands until after the events, and that will be a big loss to the island. Then there is the proposed car race. The loss it will mean to such places and to the car trade is going to be enormous, and it is most unfair. Goodness knows the season is all too short on the island if we are to live the rest of the year on the profits. The season, of course, perhaps a thing of the past now. It used to run from basically Easter, I think, didn't it, through until the end of September. To 1955, the Alaman Times, Friday, August the 26th. A great display by the Royal Signals. Now, who remembers this? An established favourite with TT visitors is the motorcycle Gymkhana, promoted by Onchan AFC. This year, the club successfully revived the Highland Games, and on Tuesday, this go-ahead group brought over the world-famous Royal Corps of Signals motorcycle display team. The club's latest venture was a smash hit. The attendance at the afternoon performance was light, but in the evening, between 2,000 and 3,000 spectators marvelled at the skill of the motorcycling signallers. Applause rolled round the terraces again and again as riders sent their machines hurtling through paper hoops, a brick wall, and 20-foot-high flames, or as the full team showed amazing judgment as they executed high-speed precision movements on the football pitch. Transport is no problem to this team. Their taxi man carried 17 friends on his Triumph Twin. Supporting the display team were local motorcyclists. They took an equal share of the cheers with their surfboard, pram and obstacle races. Would that be a sort of forerunner to the purple helmets? Perhaps so. And then finally, the Alaman Times, Friday, June the 24th, 1955. Cycle Week may outshine the TT races, we're told. Are the TT races losing their appeal? The Mayor of Douglas, Councillor R.F. Quayle, JP, told 200 cyclists at a luncheon on Monday, the day is coming when these events, the cycle races, may outshine the TT motorcycle races. His Worship presented the awards to prize winners in the Mountain Time Trial. He expressed the hope we would see new faces, as he heard that support for the events had fallen off slightly. Present at the luncheon were former world amateur sprint champion Cyril Peacock, now turned professional, and national women's 25 champion Millie Robinson, a famous cyclist, of course. Cheerless Sundays is a subheading. In thanking the organisers and the Manx public for the Race Week programme, Mr. Frank Seaman of Liverpool told cyclists of the delights of Douglas on a Sunday afternoon, especially a wet Sunday afternoon. Mr. Seaman made this plea, if we cannot get cheer without, at least let us get cheer within. From which we might take it, he went to the pub. The TT, ongoing, of course, always a spectacle, always has been a spectacle, still is a spectacle. News then, news now, whatever you're doing for your TT week, stay safe. Do enjoy it. Until next week. Cheerio. You're gonna be yesterday's news.